Legislation is changing. Budgets are shifting. And terms like one big beautiful bill can feel anything but beautiful. That's where BHM CPA Group steps in. BHM's purpose is to simplify the complex. Their team is trained to meet today's challenges with real-world solutions in tax, accounting, and business planning. Get the clarity you deserve so that your business can thrive. Don't wait. Visit BHMCPAGroup.com. That's BHMCPAGroup.com. BHM, because running a business is hard enough. Your finances shouldn't be.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers. And Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night and good luck.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Elephant in the Room. This Friday's Elephant in the Room is communism. You know, one of the greatest tropes on the right is that anyone who opposes them is a communist, a socialist, or a Marxist. Now, if you were to tie them down and threaten to have them eaten by rats, if they didn't tell you the distinctions between those three, they could never do it. They don't understand what Marxism or communism or socialism means. They don't understand the variations and the permutations of those things.
And it's a horrible thing, but it's happening in our country too. We are turning into a communist country in many ways.
That AOC and this crowd are a bunch of communists.
Your message to communist Zohran Mandami.
Well, then we'll have to arrest him. Look, we don't need a communist in this country, but if we have one, I'm going to be watching over him very carefully on behalf of the nation.
And, you know, don't ask me to get inside the mind of a liberal progressive socialist Marxist like President Biden.
The courageous veterans here today bear witness to how socialism, radical mobs, and violent communists ruin a nation. Now the Democrat Party is unleashing socialism right within our own beautiful country. Today we proclaim that America will never be a socialist or communist country. And I'm going to add that word, or communist.
They call it progressivism or something. That's just a new word for socialism and communism.
The direction our country is going in, we all know, is very dangerous. We are walking down a road that is very near socialism. They are trying to turn this country into a communist ash heap.
You cannot be the leader of the free world if you want to appease socialism.
Soviet-style price control, censorship, unlimited migration from terrorist hotspots, and unchecked power for the deep state. This fight is no longer between Democrats and Republicans. This is a fight between communism and freedom. It's a very serious fight.
I am not a Marxist, nor am I a communist, nor am I a socialist. Although America has what I like to call just the tip socialism. And it's not very much of a tip anymore, given the slaughterhouse that is the big bad bill for Medicare, Medicaid. But they're chanting over and over again, you're a communist, you're a communist. It appeals to a certain type of person who is politically unsophisticated, who is politically, barely politically literate. It appeals to the kind of person who believes that saying those words is an irrefutable argument against the person who is somewhere to the left of the Proud Boys. You're seeing a lot of this in New York right now, where Zohran Mamdani has said he wants to open six state or city-owned grocery stores in food desert areas. And the reaction from the right has been, oh my God, it's communism. He's seizing the means of production. He's He's the vanguard of the new Bolshevism in America.
Zohran Mamdani, born 1991, delivering a major upset in the New York City mayoral primary last night, a contest that some are saying could forecast the future of the broader Democratic Party. President Trump weighing in on Mamdani's expected victory just within the past hour, slamming him as a, quote, 100% communist lunatic and warning that, quote, Democrats have crossed the line. A self-described Democratic socialist, Mamdani poised to beat former Governor Andrew Cuomo, who had been backed by prominent figures in the party's establishment after running on a platform that he says should serve as a model for the National Democratic Party.
I think he's terrible. He's a communist. The last thing we need is a communist. I said there will never be socialism in the United States. Now we have a communist. So I think he's bad news. And I think I'm going to have a lot of fun with him, watching him, because he has to come right to this building to get his money. And don't worry, he's not going to run away with anything. I think he's, frankly, I've heard he's a total nut job. I think the people of New York are crazy. If they go this route, I think they're crazy. We will have a communist in the, for the first time, really, a pure, true communist. He wants to operate the grocery stores, the department stores. What about the people that are there? I think it's crazy. And as you know, recently, we've seen some of our political system attempting to overthrow the timeless American principles and other pillars of our liberty and replace them with some of the most noxious ideas in human history, ideas that have been proven false. Members of Congress and even former presidents have been openly embracing vile creeds such as socialism, Marxism, and straight-up communism. In New York, they're trying to elect a communist, Zohran Mamdani, the guy who wants to defund the police, take over the stores and run the stores, and have the people hand out goods. And when everything falls apart, it always does. It always works that way. It never has worked any other way. Anarchy and dictatorships prevail. This guy is a communist at the highest level, and he wants to destroy New York. I love New York, and we're not going to let him do that. Generations of Americans before us did not shed their blood only so that we could surrender our country to Marxist lunatics on the eve of our 250th year. As President of the United States, I'm proclaiming here and now that America is never going to be communist in any way, shape, form, and that includes New York City.
Well, let me ask you about what Donald Trump, the president of the United States, has had to say. He's had a lot to say about your campaign. He called you a communist. Because he's the president, I want to give you a chance to respond directly to him. How do you respond? Are you a communist?
No, I am not. And I have already had to start to get used to the fact that the president will talk about how I look, how I sound, where I'm from, who I am, ultimately because he wants to distract from what I'm fighting for. And I'm fighting for the very working people that he ran a campaign to empower that he has since then betrayed. And when we talk about my politics, you know, I call myself a democratic socialist in many ways inspired by the words of Dr. King from decades ago, who said, call it democracy or call it democratic socialism, there has to be a better distribution of wealth for all of God's children in this country. And as income inequality has declined nationwide, it has increased in New York City. And ultimately, what we need is a city where every single person can thrive.
Look, I don't think that's going to that those six grocery stores are particularly going to be like the thing that resets New York. And I don't think they're actual communism. I think they're just sort of misplaced. I mean, give it a shot, pal. There's bodegas in every fucking corner, but give it a shot. Who cares? But if you really want to see communism, you really want to see socialism in America. Socialism is quite literally defined as state ownership of enterprises.
It's about Intel. There have been reports that you're considering taking a stake in Intel.
About the 10%?
About the 10%.
Yeah, I met a man who was a very nice man, and I called for his removal because I saw something by a man named Tom Cotton, a senator from Arkansas, who's a great guy, friend of mine, supporter of mine, big supporter. I'm a supporter of his too. And he wrote a pretty nasty story about the head of Intel. And I said, well, if that's right, he should resign. And he came in, saw me, we talked for a while. I liked him a lot. I thought he was very good. I thought he was somewhat a victim, but you know, nobody's a total victim, I guess. And I said, you know what? I think the United States should be given 10% of Intel. And he said, I would consider that. I said, well, I'd like you to do that.
And so Donald Trump now has forced Intel to sign over and to allow the government to purchase 10% of its shares. So now we own 10% of Intel.
The Trump administration is taking a 10% stake in the tech company Intel, a move President Trump is calling a great deal for America and for Intel. It's something some bona fide conservatives are calling socialism. Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky posted that the government owning part of Intel would be a step towards socialism.
That's
and
one.
Called it a terrible idea. Conservative radio host Eric Erickson said, quote, this is socialism with an R next to its name. And the editorial board of the conservative magazine National Review wrote this headline, quote, the government shouldn't get into the chip business.
That's a bit of an understatement.
Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom of California used this
The first day I was skeptical, but when you laugh out loud at like 30 different memes, and then you look at Fox News clips, and they really have just all lost their
minds. They're freaking out.
They've lost their...
Call his wife.
I'm sorry. You're just like, whoa, okay.
Maybe he's onto something.
They look like Democrats have looked over the past 10 years.
Right. So anyway.
Anywho.
It's interesting.
Let's bring in New York Times reporter covering Wall Street, Lauren Hirsch. Her latest piece for the Times calls President Trump, quote, corporate America's newest activist investor.
And it really hasn't started with just Intel. You've seen it with NVIDIA. You've seen it with other companies where the president really calls CEOs in, pressures them, attacks them, and then comes in and makes a deal with them. Tim Cook, I mean, we could go down the list.
Yeah, you know, one of the key signifiers that this was going to be a trend was the acquisition of U.S. Steel, a American iconic company. We sold it to Japan's Nippon. President Trump on the campaign trail had said he did not want the deal to go through. He ultimately let it go through with this key addition that the U.S. takes a stake in the company. And everyone I spoke to said there was no reason why taking a stake in company would address any of the national security concerns that were with that deal. And ever since then, we've seen him step up and kind of his willingness and desire to take a role in the way that corporate America runs its business. And Intel seems to be this, so far, you know, grand combination. But talking to sources, there's more, and there could be more on the way.
Well, you know, and Jaymar, this is something we talked about on Friday, where you have the president who is getting involved in absolutely everything, wants to be involved in everything, wants deals out of everything, wants money out from everybody, wants money from our allies, wants money from our rivals, so the tariff part of it, wants money from Ivy League schools, wants money from tech companies. Well, you know, I mean, he's using the leverage that only the president of the United States has, try to get as much money as he can. And here, a 10% stake. And again, a cornerstone, a company that's a cornerstone of the technological revolution since 1990.
Joe, the invisible hand is pretty damn visible these days.
Very visible.
It seems like, from the White House. Yeah, no, 10% stake in Intel. Yeah, go ahead, NVIDIA. You can sell your chips to China, but we're going to need a little taste, as they say in Philadelphia. We're going to need some of that for us here too, Jensen Wang. I mean, it's it does show the extent to which Trump is not committed to any kind of conservative project, right? There is no Trumpism besides the idea of Trump's own success. He's not a philosophical at all. But boy, Joe, besides Rand Paul, the response is deafening
from
an elected official.
Hey, Jay Moore, why don't we just underline that fact? That's the most... Actually, we all focus so much
That's
on Donald Trump with all of these stories we've done
That's
over
right.
the first hour and a half. Really, story's not really
That's right.
about Donald Trump. As I said last week, the story is about the Republicans in Congress who have completely turned their back on everything they ever told their constituents they supported.
Well, which is why a lot of them vote with their feet, Joe. I mean, if, going back to 2017, the exodus of congressional Republicans, some voluntarily, some less so, I mean, up to and including the last couple of weeks, folks like Chip Roy, up-and-coming member of the House, you know, Ted Cruz acolyte from the Hill Country of Texas, says, you know what, I think I'd rather give up my congressional seniority, go back to Austin, and be the state AG, because they understand the bargain here. The bargain is their voters want them to be loyal to Donald Trump, don't care about the particulars of policy differences, and just don't really much want them to stand right up for conservative principle. And so if you're a guy like Chip Roy, you say, I got it. I've done it. I'm not going to do it any longer. So I think the response is silence, but it's also folks just headed for the exits, Joe.
Well, you look, Mike, at Chip Roy. There's a perfect example. Here's a guy that showed up last year, said, what have we done to reduce spending? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. We should be ashamed of ourselves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Other members of the Freedom Caucus saying the same thing. And then they all rolled over, Chip Roy included. They all rolled over. Almost all of them rolled over, except maybe one or two, maybe Massey. I don't know where Massey ended up. But this bill, the biggest bill in the history of the Republic, passes. The biggest spending bill ever. The highest deficits coming ever. The highest national debt coming ever, adds $20 trillion over the next decade to the debt. This lumps on another $4 trillion to that. They do nothing. So if you're Chip Roy, what do you say? You say, okay, I said I was going to come to Washington and I was going to fight to do what Republicans used to do, which was balance the budget 4 years in a row.
Yeah.
And they don't do it. So they just quit.
Chip Roy is probably the perfect example of what happens when your frustration as a Republican, conservative Republican politician, and your fear of what might happen.
I was going to say, you know what's not frustrating?
What?
Standing up to the leadership. I'd say, you want to fight?
None of them do that.
You want to fight? Because this is what happens when you get enough people. You go, you want to fight? I would love to fight you. It'd only make me more popular in my home district. Let's fight.
Well, they're not fighting over
nobody
things
will.
Like Intel.
Nobody
they're
will. Not fighting oh, right. I know. That's like what that. I'm saying. Yeah. It's insane. They're quitting. They're not fighting.
On basics.
So, Lauren, on the Intel and all the tech bros who go into the White House, into the Oval to speak with the president, what about the board of Intel? What does the board have to say about this, or any of the boards involved?
So the interesting thing here is, obviously, President Trump has a very big stick, to use a lack of a better word, right? There's a carrot and the stick. And I don't think they're saying a whole lot. You know, I don't think the board really felt like they had a choice. They had taken the money through the CHIPS Act under President Biden. The money was there. They had allocated it. They were planning to spend it in a certain way. You saw President Trump going after the CEO of Intel very publicly.
Yeah.
And then when the president says, I would like a stake in your company rather than cash, there's not much they can do, but my reporting indicates, I think there's some concern about the way in which this all went down, which is a little...
Well, there should... That is classified as statement. There should be all across the business community
the
in America.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
those...
Yeah.
Once said they supported free market.
And I should say, you know, I've spoken to lawyers, to bankers, all of their clients who have taken on money through the CHIPS Act realize that they're vulnerable. They could be next. And they're worried.
What if Republicans, MAGAs listening in, what if President Kamala Harris or President Hillary Clinton or President Barack Obama or President Wes Moore or President Gavin Newsom someday says, you know what? We're going to buy 50% of United Healthcare and 50% of Aetna and 50% of Blue Cross Blue Shield and 50% of Cigna because we need to make sure we have some skin in the game. The argument Trump is using to buy the Intel shares, to buy 10% of Intel, is that the American government has invested a significant amount of money into Intel with both military and defense contracts and with the CHIPS and Science Act, and that we deserve as the country to have equity in that. The argument, if you accept that argument, that government spending on an industry or a sector or a company therefore demands government ownership of that sector, applies to the healthcare sector vastly more than it does to Intel. Vastly more than it does to any other form of business, except perhaps defense contractors. Now, not a single Republican who screams communism, communism, communism every time we say maybe we shouldn't let poor people starve in the street or die or bankrupt their families with healthcare debt. They seem to be less upset about Donald Trump taking over this part of the government or taking over this part of the corporate sector. You've got Howard Lutnick, that grinning fucking moron out there.
Do you know when this country actually had a trade surplus secretary?
The president likes to speak about before.
No, historically. When did we have a trade surplus? That's the, I'm not talking about the president. Historically.
I think early, about 100 years ago.
It was the Great Depression. It was a sign of what was going on. It was during the Great Depression. That's a direction none of us wants to go.
If Vietnam, for example, came to you tomorrow and said, okay, Mr. Secretary, you win. We're going to remove all tariffs and all trade barriers. Would the United States please do the same? Would you accept that deal?
Absolutely not. Okay. Absolutely not. That would be the silliest thing we could do.
What's the purpose of reciprocity then? Is reciprocity not one of your goals? Are you telling the president that we shouldn't seek reciprocity? If that's what you're telling him, why are you trying to do these trade deals?
What do we want? We want to encourage Vietnam to produce products they're great at producing.
But I want to get back to reciprocity. You just said you don't believe in, you don't accept reciprocity as a goal. What are you negotiating in these trade deals?
Why would we open our bank account and what? Their bank account.
Why are you negotiating trade deals? You're trying to get other countries to lower their tariffs and trade barriers in return for us lowering ours.
That's true for the things that they'll take from us.
That's called reciprocity.
Of course.
So I want to be really precise here. I'm not trying to stupid shame anybody, especially not the only Secretary of Commerce that the United States of America has right now. And he might be really smart at other stuff, but he obviously doesn't know jack, you know what, about trade. This is the person in charge of the deals.
We're going to do more, though. This isn't the last. This is just the first.
What parts of this free marketeers don't smack of socialism to you? Don't smack of cronyism to you? Don't smack of the kind of business model, the kind of economic model that, who is that? Who is that handsome, charming Russian? Oh, Vladimir Putin. As the Russian economy transformed from the Soviet Union into Russia, we had the brief Yeltsin period. But when Putin took power, he started saying to companies, you have to hire my boys, my friends, my supporters. You have to give them shares, give them equity. You have to give the government equity in your companies. You have to let me control what you do, what you sell, how much you make. Putin is an unsentimental guy. He's sentimental about the Soviet Union. See, the Soviet Union wasn't particularly efficient as an economy, as you may have recalled.
You know, on the one hand, kind of today is almost one of about four or five different dates that could plausibly be that fall of the Soviet Union. Of course, the red flag stayed flying over the Kremlin until the 25th of December. So it was a rather drawn out process. And what we've really seen throughout this year of anniversaries, is very much a kind of a revanchist kind of sentiment coming out of the Kremlin and coming out of loyalist media. You know, and this generally, I think, reflects kind of public opinion in Russia. Putin, of course, several years ago, famously called the collapse of the USSR the sort of the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century. And that indeed is the sort of the sentiment of emotion put forward in the Duma, Russia's parliament today. And I think in general, this kind of coincides or sort of at least sort of agrees with sort of public sentiment, I think, here. What we see is even if a majority of people don't want to sort of live under communism or return to the Soviet Union. They do certainly regret the collapse of the Soviet Union, and that certainly is the Russian, I think, position. Of course, people in the 15 other republics you mentioned have very, very sort of different views and contest the fall. But I think definitely sort of these anxieties and these rivaling interpretations of the fall really are played out in what we see today on the international stage. These sort of tensions that we see between the West and Russia over Ukraine now are crucially important. Of course, if we go back 30 years, the fate of Ukraine was really at the center of these negotiations in Almaty in Kazakhstan. Boris Yeltsin, the Russian president at the time, was clear that no union could be preserved if Ukraine were not involved in it. And I think the extraordinary prominence of Ukraine in sort of international relations in matters concerning Russia in recent years really reflects this, this sort of like inflated importance of Ukraine in the Russian imagination and in the sort of the settlement that emerged after 1991.
But Donald Trump is emulating this quite along the same lines. So you ask yourself, if you're a MAGA supporter and you are a free marketeer. Now, by the way, most of these free market types, they're what I call Glenn Beck free market types.
If you want to just have the argument that, well, the president shouldn't negotiate on our behalf, wait a minute, as a taxpayer, if you're going to, can we just not get keep getting hit in the face by everybody around the world? They're all, this is so complex. This makes my brain hurt.
They've heard the words communism. They've heard the words free markets on talk radio. They don't know what they mean. They don't understand what they entail. They don't really have a grasp.
When I win, I will immediately bring prices down.
Starting on day one, we will end inflation and make America affordable again. To bring down the prices of all goods.
Prices will come down. You just watch. They'll come down and they'll come down fast, not only with insurance, with everything.
President Trump's tariffs may be taking an upfront toll on America's farmers as crop prices plunge and duties cause a hike in costs on tractors, fertilizers, and other farming equipment. A Purdue University survey showing farmer sentiment dropping for the third straight month in August, expressing less optimism about the agriculture economy. But the president has asked farmers to keep trusting him and give the trade policies time to play out.
They don't really have a grasp of what markets are. Donald Trump has been intervening in markets since his first administration, when he told people how they could make dishwashers.
But I'm also approving new dishwashers that give you more water so you can actually wash and rinse your dishes without having to do it 10 times. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Anybody have a new dishwasher? I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry for that. It's worthless.
He's been intervening in markets right now, saying to car companies, you can't make EVs, you got to make gas-powered cars.
President Trump signed a measure Thursday to block California's rule phasing out the sale of gas-powered cars.
This horrible scheme would effectively abolish the internal combustion engine, which most people prefer.
The California rule was designed to force the move to electric vehicles. The state's attorney general says he'll challenge the measure, calling it a retaliation against California.
He's been intervening in energy companies saying, nope, you can't build wind power anymore because I don't like it, because the birds and the whales.
And the other thing I say to Europe, we will not allow a windmill to be built in the United States. They're killing us. They're killing the beauty of our scenery, our valleys, our beautiful plains, and I'm not talking about airplanes, I'm talking about beautiful plains, beautiful areas in the United States, and you look up and you see windmills all over the place. It's a horrible thing. It's the most expensive form of energy. It's no good. They're made in China, almost all of them. When they start to rust and rot in 8 years, you can't really turn them off. You can't bury them. They won't let you bury the propellers, you know, the props, because there's a certain type of fiber that doesn't go well with the land. That's what they say. The environmentalists say you can't bury them because the fiber doesn't go well with the land.
In other words, if you bury it, it will harm our soil. The whole thing is a con job. It's very expensive. And in all fairness, Germany tried it, and wind doesn't work. It's ever, you need subsidy for wind, and energy should not need subsidy. You, with energy, you make money. You don't lose money. But more important than that is it ruins the landscape. It kills the birds. They're noisy. You know, you have a certain place in the Massachusetts area that over the last 20 years had one or two whales wash ashore, and over the last short period of time, they had 18, okay? Because it's driving them loco. It's driving them crazy. Now, windmills will not come. It's not going to happen in the United States. And it's a very expensive, and I would love to see. I mean, today I'm playing the best course, I think, in the world, Turnberry. Even though I own it, it's probably the best course in the world, right? And I look over the horizon, and I see 9 windmills, like, right at the end of the 18th. I said, isn't that a shame? What a shame. You have the same thing all over Europe in particular. You have windmills all over the place. Some of the countries prohibit it, but people ought to know that these windmills are very destructive. They're environmentally unsound, just the exact opposite, because the environmentalists, they're not really environmentalists. They're political hacks. They're these are people that they almost want to harm the country. But you look at these beautiful landscapes all over the, you know, the world. Many countries have gotten smart. They will not allow it. They will not. It's the worst form of energy, the most expensive form of energy. But windmills should not be allowed.
What you are seeing, free marketeers, is a president who is post-capitalist. What you are seeing is a president who believes that to profit himself, his family, and to increase his political power in the economy and in the country, that the state ownership of private enterprises and private businesses is called for.
That's a great guy. He's the best president we've had since Reagan, maybe even better. That's what it means to me.
Makes a lot of money.
That's one of his businesses. He makes money.
You don't mind that?
No, I don't mind it at all. Not at all.
What do you make of this?
It's great. It kind of signifies Trump, signifies his brand, and it signifies America. Luxury, golf, great pride.
Market of crypto and Bitcoin and all of it, everything. Make America the crypto capital of the world. I launched it. I heard it was very successful. I haven't checked it. Where is it today?
You made a lot of money, sir.
How much?
Several billion dollars, it seems like, in the last several days.
Several billion? That's peanuts for these guys.
The Trump family is making billions off of crypto. World Liberty Financial, the venture co-founded by the president's 3 sons, has earned the family $5 billion in paper wealth after it opened trading on a new digital currency, making it available for buying and selling on the open market. According to the Wall Street Journal, the trading debut was most likely the biggest financial success for the president's family since the inauguration, and cryptocurrency is likely now the Trump's most valuable asset, exceeding their decades-old property portfolio.
Process this again, guys. Think this through. If the argument that Trump is making, and if you accept that argument, that we spent X amount of dollars on the Chips and Science Act, and therefore Intel and Micron and other companies now owe us for that investment. You have to allow the government to profit from that investment in terms of being equity owners of those businesses. If that is your argument, if you accept that argument, then the healthcare industry in this country, which has profited so lavishly off of trillions of dollars of government expenditures, since the healthcare market, which absolutely has at the center of its business model, Medicare, Medicaid. Why aren't we buying those companies? Why aren't we demanding those companies turn over equity to the government? Why aren't we demanding those companies do the things that we want them to do? Donald Trump is not a capitalist. He's a crony capitalist on his very best days. But Donald Trump is a socialist. Donald Trump is an authoritarian socialist. He combines the worst of all possible worlds. This isn't, again, the sort of just the tip socialism or the sort of quaint and quiet bijou Northern European socialism. Yes, taxes are high, but we all have health care. This is a socialism that is narrowly crafted to benefit Donald Trump and a few of his cronies. So again, tell me why the United States government does not own a chunk of these companies that we have spent trillions of dollars in. Tell me why United Healthcare and Blue Cross and Aetna and Cigna and all the rest do not turn over their equity to the U.S. government. You know, when I was a Republican, it was a sort of article of faith over the long, long years. You know, government health care could never work. It's a disaster. And the longer I've looked at this, the longer that disaster seems like it's been managed in other countries. And yes, I know the horror stories. Oh, they have to wait so long for... Those are pretty de minimis edge cases as the for the most part. And the more you look at this rapidly changing economy that we're in, where part of the big bad bill is going to jack up that lifeline economic, that economic lifeline of relatively affordable healthcare plans for people, where you're cutting $250 billion out of rural hospitals, and whatever J.D. Vance says, we're adding it back in. No, you're not.
What does it mean for the rural hospitals of Minnesota?
Huge. 300 hospitals nationally will close down because of this bill for two reasons. One, the Medicaid cuts. I'm not surprised that you have senators speaking out about that, because 16 million people are going to lose their health care because of this proposal. Secondly, Medicare. The debt is so big from this bill, $3.4 trillion, a trillion of it in higher interest. Why? Because it adds to the debt. $3.4 trillion in 10 years. That actually triggers automatic Medicare cuts to the tune of $500 billion. All of this adds to huge problems to rural hospitals that are already thinly holding on. And there are so many red states that are going to be affected by this. 4 million people are going to be tossed off of food assistance, many of them in rural areas. And then, of course, you have the debt issue.
You look at all those things, and you look at the coming economic crisis that we're entering into. You look at the AI-driven economic crisis we're about to enter into, and tell me why we don't own those healthcare companies. Tell me why. Because they are not particularly innovative, except in improving their billing practices. They are not particularly delivering a high-quality product. They're not particularly sensitive to the changing demographics of the country. They are not, and I don't mean that racially, you morons. I mean that in terms of the gigantic age, the top-heavy age problem we have with the boomers. None of this that's coming would make any argument other than we should have equity in those companies. We should have control in those companies. We have seats on their boards. We should have seats on their boards. We should be part of their corporate governance. This is the argument Trump is making with Intel and Micron and other tech companies, where we have put far, 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 far less government money into those companies than we have into healthcare. This is a big elephant in the room because Trump wants you to believe that he believes in capitalism, that he believes in free markets. Nothing about the MAGA party, folks, is free market.
In the auto industry, Ford, GM, Toyota, Hyundai, they were reportedly among Trump's biggest donors. In finance, there was Citadel, Coinbase, Robinhood, and in tech, Google, Apple, Amazon, Meta, Microsoft, OpenAI, Uber. And how much did they all donate? A cool $1 million each. Except Robinhood, they donated $2 million. And Uber's CEO donated separately and personally another million. Now, in at least one way, you can kind of think of these more like purchases than donations.
My administration will use every tool at our disposal to ensure that the United States can build and maintain the largest, most powerful, and most advanced AI infrastructure anywhere on the planet. My first week in office, I signed an executive order to ban the creation of a CBDC in the United States. And very soon, I look forward to signing legislation that will codify and ban the, make it a permanent law, put it in permanence. I'm also committed to signing landmark crypto market structure legislation this year to grow the industry. We're going to be growing it even more than people ever thought. It's a really hot industry.
President Trump says he wants more deals like the agreement announced with tech giant Intel last week. It gave the U.S. government a 10% stake in its business.
In the case of Intel was interesting, but I hope I'm going to have many more cases like it. There will be other cases. If I have that opportunity again, I would do that. And then, you know, you do have stupid people say, oh, that's a shame. It's not a shame. It's called business.
Nothing about the MAGA party is capitalism anymore. Nothing about the MAGA party has anything to do with an F.A. Hayek approach to the economic world we live in. It is increasingly about a corruption. It is increasingly about a particular flavor of corruption that is enormously insidious. We've seen it play out in Russia. And Trump, as he takes over these companies and puts his people on the boards of these companies and takes control of these companies, tells them what they can and can't do, increasingly, those companies will be stacked to the gills with the people around Trump. Well, Don Jr. needs a seat on your board now. Oh, yeah. You own this beautiful profitable enterprise. Well, we own it now. You're not putting in X million dollars a year into my son's private equity firm. Well, I think you should, or you know, your business could have some consequences. This is corrupt. It is cronyism. Again, it's crony capitalism in its best day, but what it really is authoritarian socialism. You know, when Saddam was the president of Iraq, his family members, way down to the third cousins, ran almost everything. The state road building companies that were approved to build roads in Iraq were all owned by, shocker, the Tikriti families that were around Saddam. They were cousins. They were second cousins. They were third cousins. They were people from the old hometown. You are going to see a preview of a profoundly dysfunctional American economy if you allow Donald Trump and this insane economic model to prevail. Look, I said in the beginning, I am not a socialist. I am not a communist. I am not a Marxist. However, unlike most, I'm not just going to say most, I'm going to say 99%, not higher, 99.9% of these MAGAs who scream communism at the drop of a hat. I have read Marx. I have read Engels. I have read history. I have read Hayek. I've read the great conservative economics thought thinkers and the great socialist economic thinkers. I'm still on the free market side, although we don't have a free market economy in this country. It has gotten centered around bigness and around influence and around power. Right now, a company is successful in the market not because they produce a better product or service. They're successful now in the market because they're able to lobby the government to provide them with economic advantages based on regulatory and tax structures. That's not free market. What Trump is doing will make that even more egregious and even worse. You've seen many, many companies bend the knee to Donald Trump already. You've seen many, many of these corporate institutions say, hey, you know, if we're doing it, they'll cut off our deal. It won't do. Yes, that is what he will do. And it's up to you, if you believe in the free market, if you believe in the great blessings that the American free market has provided you, then you will say no to these blackmail attempts. You'll say no to this extortion. You will say no to this corruption. Unfortunately, we know how America is these days. And anybody who's relying on a corporate board or a corporate CEO to represent American values is not going to prevail. These guys care about their quarterly earnings. They care about their stock price. They care about shareholder value. Other than that, the rest of us are stuck. What you're seeing from Trump is authoritarian socialism. And for all you MAGAs out there, love to scream, you're a communist, you're a Marxist, you're a Maoist. Maoism, proving you guys didn't understand anything about communism. You think we're Maoists on the center right and the center left. All of it, once again, proves the point. The projection is their mother's milk of the MAGA party. Donald Trump is a socialist. He is socializing private companies. Government is controlling them, buying them, buying into them, forcing themselves into those companies. And if you don't think that more corruption follows that, you are not paying attention. That's the elephant in the room this week. Look forward to seeing you again next time. Folks, thanks so much for watching Lincoln Square and for watching today's Elephant in the Room. We have a lot of stuff on the Lincoln Square platform right now, more than I could possibly recount. But you can get all our great podcasts. You can get That Trippy Show, Bobby Jones. You can see Lives with Stuart Stevens every week, Lives with me every week. We're doing an absolutely bang-up job, I think, in helping people understand the fight we're really in. And that fight is big, it is important, it is consequential. Do me a favor, check out my other podcast, the Lincoln Project podcast, and my other podcast, The Enemies List. You can catch me streaming on Tuesdays on The Strategy Session on Lincoln Square, on Thursdays on The Breakdown, and on Fridays with my son, Andrew Wilson, who is a brilliant young pollster who dives into the numbers every week and gives us a real perspective on where Trump actually is, where the politics of the country actually are right now. As always, folks, I appreciate you. Do me a favor, go out, like, subscribe, do all those things that the algorithm demands of all of us. Thank you, everybody. See you again soon.
The Lincoln Project Podcast is a Lincoln Project production. Executive produced by Whitney Hayes, Ben Howe, and Joey Wartner-Cheney. Edited by Riley Main. Hey, folks, if you want to support the Lincoln Project's work against Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and this MAGA craziness, go to action.lincolnproject.us/helplp. If you'd like to get in touch or have suggestions for a guest or a show topic, or just want to say hi, our email is podcast@lincolnproject.us. For our MAGA friends, please, no more nudes. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Good night, and good luck.